one of the big businesses here, one of the biggest money makers here in the city, and one of the claim to fame, at least in my humble opinion, of Dubai is the hotel business, the hoteliers. And this happens to be one of the global hubs. It's becoming, only in the last, you know, 5, 6, 7 years, really rising up and starting to compete globally. So we have one of the leading hoteliers here in the GCC, Laurent Vauvenel, the chief executive officer of one of the leading hotel groups out here, Hospitality Management Holdings. Let's hear a little bit more about his background.
Laurent Vauvenel is the CEO of Hotel Management Holdings, a hotel management company which has hotel owners and developers as its clients. Laurent took over the job in October last year and brings over 28 years of hotel management experience with some of the world's leading international hospitality brands. In his career, Laurent has been associated with hotel chains such as Starwood Hotels and Resorts or Hilton Hotels and Resorts that took him to some of the most fascinating and challenging destinations across Europe, Asia Pacific and the Middle East. Among them, places like Hawaii, Tahiti, French Polynesia, Bahrain, Jordan and Saudi Arabia. During the course of his postings, it is Laurent's job to oversee the strategic planning, business development, operations, financial and analytical processes, the owner relations, brand conversion and communication.
Well, Laurent, welcome to Eye on Careers.
Hi, good evening, Shane.
It's a pleasure to have you here. And it's a very kind of sexy business. I mean, even just saying a hotelier, it sounds, you know, it's very, it's much better than banker.
Well, it sounds very French to me. Yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah. But it's not. Was it originally French? I thought the first hotel was in Italy, wasn't it?
It was in Europe, yes. I will not be able to confirm if it was in Italy or not. But, you know, hotel industry has been part of European life, basically, you know, since the beginning of the time, actually.
I thought it was the Vatican, because the Vatican and the Pope and everything would have, you know, kings and queens and all these very high estate people routinely coming, that they had to build a hotel to deal with this, because, you know, you just can't have the queen of some country chilling on your couch.
Well, I'm pretty sure that basically before the Vatican built the hotels, I'm pretty sure that everybody has a hostel, we call that auberge. I will not be able to confirm definitely if the Vatican had the first hotel. So if it's the case, definitely I learned something today.
Okay. Interesting. So how did you always want to be a hotelier starting out, or what was the deal? Or did you want to maybe do something else, like, I don't know, play football?
No, definitely no. I did not want to be an hotelier whatsoever, actually. I wanted to be a military jet pilot.
A military jet pilot?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Is it that? So what happened? You're kind of tall. Do you fit in the plane? I think you're too big.
That's exactly what. That was exactly what happened. I basically failed the physical test because I was already 4 inches taller than the maximum sizes.
4 inches taller. Huh?
Yeah, absolutely. So I was absolutely dead from the beginning.
Ah, okay. Interesting. So that was the end of that.
Yep.
And so then, what happened next?
Well, what happened next is very simple. You know, the test was when I was 16, and basically my mom used to be an executive housekeeper in a 5-star hotel. My grandpa and grandma also used to be executive housekeeper in 5-star hotel. And therefore, you know, when you're a student and you need to make some money, it was just natural for me to work in the hotel industries, and that's how I started, basically.
Okay, so, you know, I think one of the big pieces of the food, of the hotel business is a food and beverage line, isn't it? I mean, a big chunk of your revenues?
Absolutely.
Well, we have a caller here who has a restaurant, and he's a bit struggling, and maybe we can help him out. What do you think?
Well, let's give it a try.
Okay, hello? Is this Amin?
Yes, Amin speaking. Hi, good evening, guys.
Hi, welcome to Eye on Careers.
Hi, Amin.
Thank you so much. Thank you for calling me back and for bringing my story.
Yeah, so you have a restaurant. What kind of food are you serving?
In fact, it was a running restaurant since the last 3 years. It was serving Moroccan cuisine.
Okay, and why is the restaurant, yeah, the restaurant's not making money, or is it empty? What's the main issue with the restaurant?
Yeah, I tell you, as per the history of the restaurant, in the beginning it was making money, then there was no proper management and proper operation, so the profit went down. I bought it at 6 months ago.
Okay.
And I tried to change the cuisine or do a little changes in the cuisine as well as the name. However, I'm struggling in finding the right concept. So I bought it. I tried to manage it as it was. I failed on that.
But just quickly, so basically there's people coming and eating in the restaurant, so you have cash flow coming in, and your cost position was too high, so you changed the menu to try to put more margin items on the menu, or what was the thinking behind that?
I tell you, the ex managers and the ex owners, they were serving shisha with the food, and I thought when I took the restaurant, I stopped the shisha, and I thought to concentrate on the cuisine. However, it failed to be.
Just so as soon as you took the shisha out, everyone left.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. I don't know, Laurent. What do you think of this?
Well, it is quite a tough call. But you know, at the end of the day, when you buy your restaurant, you need to know exactly what you want. What is the aim of? Why do you want to buy the restaurant? Is it basically to please yourself or to make money? And if you are taking one of the biggest profit makers of the restaurant, which is the shisha, because you feel that it's not appropriate, then at the end of the day, you shoot yourself in your foot. So, it's always the same thing. It doesn't matter if it's a hotel or if it's a restaurant. You know, what is the purpose? Why do you buy the restaurant? Are you trying to create something for yourself, for your image, for legacy, or are you trying to make money? If it's to make money, it's a total different philosophy, and obviously the feasibility study needs to be done according to the wish.
I can't believe I can't believe you got rid of the shisha. Why did you do that?
Okay. No, just Monsieur Laurent, that's just a question.
Yeah, and don't call me Mr. Laurent, because Mr. I feel like so old already. Just call me Laurent like everybody else.
Laurent. Okay. It's fun to say. Laurent. I feel like I can speak French when I say your name.
Yeah, you can? Well, I almost can speak English when I pronounce Shane.
Okay.
Yeah, go ahead, shoot.
I have two floors in my restaurant, and actually I'm located in a good place. I'm opposite. I can see Burj Khalifa in my place.
Okay.
Recently, I bought all the equipment to start a bakery, which is the vinoiserie and patisserie and all those pastry stuff.
Okay.
So do you think that this works with? I want to make a floor down, which is a cafe or a lounge with a bakery, and up, like a cuisine or a restaurant with a shisha. Does that work as a concept?
Well, let's put it this way. One, I will need to look at the locations. You know, if you send everything to Shane, then I can take a look at it, because at the end of the day, I live near close by. So, you know, I'm almost in the area almost every day. So, and that's also the place where I usually sit down on the terrace and have shisha. So putting the shisha on the first floor, when you potentially have a bigger restaurant and a bigger terrace outside where you can make more money with the shisha, but, you know, maybe not the best idea. Now, having said so, we need to look at the locations. We need to look at the food traffic. And we need to know exactly what type of food offering you're basically giving to your customers. You know, people are also very price sensitive. You look at your price resistance to make sure that you have the right product at the right price. Unfortunately, today, the customers have changed quite drastically over the past few years. You know, you don't go to a restaurant to eat anymore. You know, it may sound ridiculous, but the quality of the food is not basically the reason why you go to a restaurant. The quality of the food, for example, in the latest surveys, which was done over 230,000 people, was arriving, I believe, on, if my memory is correct, on 7 positions. So definitely the food quality was not, you know, the main criteria for someone to select the restaurant. And the main criteria was value for money. The second one was atmosphere. Number 3 was locations. Number 4 was parking. Believe it or not, service come on 5, and quality and the cleanliness of the toilets on 6.
Wow.
And the food quality only arrive on 7. So again, if you put your things in place and you put your market studies well in position, then you have a chance potentially to succeed. But do me a favor, Emad, you know, just give that to a professional to handle, because most of the people who try to go the hotel business or the restaurant business end up basically on the TV show with Gordon Ramsay. So be careful.
I can tell you, though, I have friends who literally pick places based on the quality of the shisha. So I don't know if your survey is Western biased or it's a Middle Eastern survey, but these guys actually compete to find the newest little nook and cranny shisha place with, you know, they put ice in the tube. Yep. And they have all these techniques and they're like, my shisha place is the best, no, mine's better. So it's interesting, but we can't get shisha at Amin's place. I mean, what's up with that?
No, but you know, at the end of the day, Shane, you know, at the end of the day, you're very right. You know, the concept and the survey which was done basically by Westerner, you know, including in the Middle East.
Picked up on that.
Yeah. But nevertheless, I can tell you, I am exactly one of your Middle Eastern customers. You know, I do select the place where I go based on the quality of the shisha.
Guilty of charge. You have the answer, I mean. I think the final thing, I mean, are you willing to give equity up in this restaurant for someone who comes in and picks it up? Are you willing to get put? Is there equity on the table?
Yes. I'm really willing to do that because I manage three other companies that has no relation with this industry.
Okay. Well, if anyone wants to get in on this equity deal, you can SMS us at 4001. Transaction on the table. I mean, we have to cut to a quick break, but thank you so much. We'll be back in touch with
you offline. Thank you very much.
Okay. Good luck with that.
Good luck.
Thanks. Bye.
Well, that was exciting. We have an equity deal on the table, and we have one of the top hoteliers here, Laurent Vauvenel, the Chief Executive Officer of Hospitality Management Holdings, giving his insights on how to make your business better, how to drive your career forward. We're going to have more tidbits from the mastermind himself in just a minute.
Dubai Eye 103.8. Stay one step ahead.
Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm here with Laurent Vauvenel, the Chief Executive Officer of Hospitality Management Holdings. Welcome back, Laurent, to Eye on Careers.
Thank you, Shane.
That was pretty exciting. I mean, we almost had an equity. We had a private equity guy on the show, Mukhtar Hassan, who's one of the pioneers. And the private equity gods just seem to follow this man wherever he goes. Right after he leaves, we have a live private equity deal on the radio. I don't think I've ever done that before.
You always have us first sometime.
And, you know, I think you were offered equity right on the show. So that was amazing. Here's our contest. Let's see if anyone can guess who this is. We were saying, can you figure out who this quote is? And this individual we met at the INSEAD Global Business Leaders Conference, and he gave us an insight into what are some of the traits of a top performer. What are the, you know, someone who's reaching peak performance? What are, you know, Lauren, what are some of your traits? This is what we were asking him, and this is what he had to say.
Absolutely. I think curious people who are, by definition, in my view, have an entrepreneurial mind, which means they look at issues from an opportunity perspective and how to address it, rather than just, you know, this is not my job, I have something else to do, or a job description. Then these are the leaders. It's very clear for me in 35 years in building businesses in the region and globally, those are the people that have the few, if you want, that have that carry organizations.
What are the top traits you say for someone who's going to be successful in business or in their profession?
So top traits, look, there's no secret formula here. So you need to know what business you're in, obviously, what that requires, but your ability to lead and think of yourself as a leader, not a manager only. But you have to be able to manage, obviously.
Well, there you have it. If you know who that was, SMS is at 4001 and give us the name of the person you think that is. And look at that. I think we do actually have somebody who has guessed. We can give out more than one winner, though. Here's the first winner. I think you have about 5 seconds to get it in if you do. Hello, is this Farah?
Yeah, hi, this is Farah.
Hi, Farah. Thanks for joining us on Eye on Careers.
thanks for having me. And thanks for picking me.
Okay, great. Yeah, so I think you guessed it was right. I mean, how could you know that? How did you figure it out?
Okay, it's actually really deduction because of his, because I've heard Sadi speak before, and I thought it was him, and then I did a quick Google check on this list of speakers, and yeah, it was him, so I figured.
Ah, there you go. You Googled it. Okay, so it's Fadi Gundur for anyone out there. Fadi started, when I asked him what was the scariest moment of running his business, he said, the first 15 years. And then he said, the first time I got a good night's sleep was when we listed on the New York Stock Exchange. And he goes, and it didn't last for that long. He's like, you know, it's a tough run being an entrepreneur. But congratulations, Farah. You're the winner. And we'll get back to you shortly with that.
Oh, thank you. Thanks so much.
Okay, have a great weekend.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye. So, Lauren, what do you think are the traits of a top performer?
Well, you know, we are talking about leadership. And, you know, first of all, it's definitely one of the key elements. You know, if you're not a leader today, it is definitely difficult, basically, to be an entrepreneur if you're not a leader. Now, you know, everybody has his own conceptions of leadership. And that's really funny because, you know, I did my 2 or 3 executive courses actually at INSEAD. So, and I think that I do have taken one of the courses actually with that professor there. And leadership actually, it's quite simple. First of all, you have a vision.
Did you just say it's quite simple?
Yeah, it's quite simple.
It's
No.
Very easy.
You know, you can make it very complicated. And, you know, if you read the book of George Welch, you know, for example, you realize that, you know, he needs 600 pages basically to tell you what he can do in 2 phrases, you know. but, you know, he's more talented than I am. And that's why he's making much more money there also. But nevertheless, you know, what is a leader today? You know, first of all, the leader has a vision and he set the directions. That's the very basic one. The second one is going to align the people. Because obviously you cannot do it alone. You need to have a team and everybody has to put in the same directions. And number 3, he has to deliver the result. You know, and that's what a leader is about. Your vision by setting the directions, aligning the people, and deliver the result.
What about the whip hand? Does a leader have to bring the whip hand sometimes?
Well, you know, Vincente Lombardi used to say, you know, nice guy finish last. So I guess, yeah, sometime once in a while you do have basically to...
Crack the whip. Crack the whip.
Well, we are not using a whip anymore, but, you know, we are flexible.
You're flexible. But, I mean, I think that, you know, you at certain times, you know, you respond, you know, to that. You know, kind of, you need a push, you know, sometimes, right? I mean, it's not that you need to create an environment of fear, but at the end of the day, if you want to reach peak performance, you have to kind of have a hard edge at some point.
Well, I will agree and disagree with you on this one, Shane. You know, if you want to succeed in life, you have to be a self-motivating person. If you are not motivating and you need someone to push you constantly, then basically you will not make it through. It's pretty up to you to decide what you want to do with your life. And if you want to be a top performer, then you have to be self-motivated and just push you every day.
I heard if you want to be a leader, you should spend 50% of your time leading yourself.
Well, let's put it this way. Honestly, I never calculated if you had to be 50% or not. But, you know, let me give you a very simple example. Many years ago, I was working in Hawaii, and we had one of the guest speakers came at the conference over there, and that was Magic Johnson.
You know, Magic Johnson?
Yeah, from the Lakers.
Oh, he's amazing.
Absolutely fantastic. And the guy said, you know, guys, you know...
Can I just time up before
sure.
you... Was this while he was still playing for the NBA,
yeah.
or was this when he becomes a real estate tycoon?
No. He was still playing for the NBA.
Okay.
And at the time, he said, you know, guys, you know, you only see me on the court, and basically it's, you know, how I became so famous. What you don't see is that all the hard work that I'm putting every day at 6 o'clock running on the beach and I'm alone and nobody is here to push me and nobody is here to give me a tap on the back by saying, okay, well, you did 10 miles over there today. That's great. And I think that when you start with that type of motivations and you don't need anybody to push you because you're motivated to be the best and you have to do it yourself, You know, that's the best way basically to succeed. After that, at some point of time, yes, you need to have some people who's going basically to give the directions or going to open the light in the tunnel when sometimes you don't know where to go. But at the end of the day, it really is absolutely up to you to motivate yourself just basically to kick your butt and get there in order to get the job done.
So you even want, you crack the whip hand on yourself.
Oh yes, definitely. If you don't do it over there, who are you going to ask? You're going to ask your boss, can you do me a favor and whip me so I can move faster?
It doesn't work that way anymore.
Okay.
But you know, at the end of the day, the top performer is what what do you think of this? I mean, I think the top performers focus on the opportunity, and the person who's sitting at the 50th percentile is focused on the obligation. You know, what's the obligation of your job? What are you obligated to do? And the person rising to the top is focused on the opportunity. How far can they go? What am I capable of?
Well, first of all, when you sit on the top, you know, the first thing that you need to have is a vision of what you want to achieve or what the company wants to achieve. And again, you know, vision set with directions. Now, having said so, you cannot do it alone. Under no circumstances you can do it alone, and you are as good as the team that you put around you. For example, HMH, we have 3,000 employees. Okay, so we are not a huge company, but 3,000 employees, it's, you know, still big, a significant number. But at the end of the time, at the end of the day, if you don't have directions to give the 3,000 associates or the managers, then at some point of time, you need to basically refocus on what you said.
And I mean, I think when you look at it, the true leaders, you have to live your values. You have to walk, you know, the talk. Yeah. And getting out there, that takes courage, because sometimes, you know, in order to live your values, you have to make sacrifices. Integrity can get in the way. It makes tough decisions harder, or sometimes it makes them, it doesn't take as long, you know, if you have to follow your values, it becomes very clear what you need to do. Well, how does that all fit together? You know, where does courage fit with integrity, and is that where some of the leaders fall, that they don't really have the courage to make the big decisions?
Well, let put it this way. Obviously, when you're a CEO, you do have to make some tough decisions. But you still can make tough decisions and being very decent, you know, in the way you are doing it. You know, Shane, next time you go to GLT, stop by in my office and you will see two frames on my walls. You know, one is a painting of a sailing boat and seaside, because I just basically love sailing in water. And the other one is a small frame, and it said, even if it's my right, is it the right things to do?
Even if
it's my right, is it the right things to do? So regardless if you're a CEO, if you are a banker, or if you're an entrepreneur, at the end of the day, if you do believe that you have a concept in life, then basically you can do that. That's mine. Even if it's my right, is it the right things to do? Now, yes, we have to take some type of decisions. But again, if you do it with honesty, integrity, then at the end of the day, whatever you do, you know, you still can look at yourself in the mirror and say, you know, that's okay. I still can look at you in the mirror over there and still find you decent. The most important thing is not to be a CEO. It's to be a decent person in life. And nothing stops you to be both.
They say that, you know, people, you know, the fact that you have the sailing picture up there, it means, and it's just kind of like a psychobabble thing, that they, that means that you are a very deep thinker, and that, you know, that you enjoy the solitude, and that re-energizes you.
And I also have a huge aquarium in my office when I have all my corals, because obviously one of the brand is coral. So I have a huge aquarium of 700 liters over there with all tropical, you know, exotic fish with 20 different type of corals. And the customers, when they come to my office, or the owners, when they come to the office, they spend more time watching basically the bloody seaside over there than talking business. And when they leave over there, they have a big smile. That's fantastic. That's the way also to do business.
That's a good way to do business. But was the assessment right, what I said?
Let's put it this way. When you're a CEO, you're usually alone at the top. So yes, you are used to be alone, and you are used to be obviously a thinker, because that's the one who set the visions.
So the self-reliance is really up there. Well, we are going to look at more of, you know, your North Star principles, you know, your approach to business, your philosophies, your mantras, what it is that's really makes what it really takes to be successful in the hotel business in just a business. This is a story of Laurent Vauvenel, the Chief Executive Officer of Hospitality Management Holdings.
Dubai Eye 103.8, keeping you up to date with what matters in the UAE. Stay one step ahead.
Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips, and we're here with Laurent Vauvenel, the Chief Executive Officer of Hospitality Management Holdings. Laurent, welcome back.
Thank you, Shane.
If you have a question for Laurent, this is an interactive show, so you can SMS us at 4001 or use your mobile app, which you can download on our website, which is DubaiEye1038.com. And ask any question you want. We've had a variety of questions and even someone trying to sell equity in their business live on air, which was one of the more exciting moments for me. And prior to Laurent coming on, we had Mukhtar Hassan, who is one of the pioneers of private equity in the region. And you can see his story on DubaiEye1038.com/EyeOnCareers and check out the podcast, and they're all there. But Laurent, a lot of our guests are SMSing in now. They're SMSing on 4001 if there was anyone else that had a question. But they're asking, how much, you know, what's the minimum investment I need to get in the hospitality game?
Okay, well, it is a tough question because everything depends really on the locations and the country. Obviously, if you are in a big city like London, Paris, Roma, and you want to have, for example, a five-star hotel, well, you can very well think about, you know, a key will cost you between 700 and 800,000 euro. Now, in the Middle East, the costs are a little bit more reasonable, but you will not be able to get out of a nice, decent property with each two-star hotel at less than $100,000 a key, excluding the price of the land, of course.
$100,000 a key. So that's a good metric to use. But so you've in the last year, I think you've had some wins. What have been kind of the big wins for your business over the last while?
Well, let's put it this way. When I took over the company about a year ago, we needed to do a number of strategy changes. And the biggest part of the job was really to realign basically the companies on what was the expectations and the future based on the vision which was set, you know, for 5 years. So we have to realign a number of things, you know, bring some new team members in place. We did some rebranding, and we also started to invest quite intensively in some of our hotels like the Kuhal Bicharja when we spent millions there. From that, we obviously rebrand also the Coral brand, which was today our main brand and represents 75% of our portfolio. Now, since we have done that, repositioned the brand, rebrand obviously the entire image of the company and bring the new people on board, you know, we have a few big announcements which normally should take place in November. So basically, we are going to finally get a little bit of return on investment. Because at some point of time, the company also needed to make some adjustment and spend quite a lot of money in technology. So we brought HMH at a level which today allowed us to compete with the big guys. And the announcement which will be made in November, it's quite a nice satisfaction to be able to announce that we are going to sign quite some nice contract over there and be able to take it away actually from the big guy. So it is quite it's going to be quite fun.
There's a bit of romance in being the underdog, isn't there, where you have so many metrics against you, but you also have so many cards to play, where they may have the positioning, you have the agility, where they have this, you have that. So you have so many things, as well as the CEO. You have to deal with your human capital, your finance, your marketing, mm-hmm. your branding. It almost is never ending. But what are some of your business philosophies or North Stars that kind of guide you through these big business challenges?
Well, the number one, and I think that you touched something which was extremely important, Shane. We are very agile, meaning that, you know, when we want to do something, when we want to get a business, we can move very, very quickly. If an owner said, Laurent, I have a business opportunity there, I'm in XYZ locations over there, do you mind to take a look at it? When can you come over there? I pick up my agenda and I said, okay, I will go and visit you next week. I go to visit the properties, and basically we can really look at all the formats and make the business modules as much as we want. And, you know, in a month or two, we can absolutely close the deal, sign a management contract and move on. It is absolutely impossible to do that with a big company because they have so many level of hierarchy that basically it will take 6 months just basically to send a bloody LOI. I can send an LOI and I can send basically an NDA within 24 hours. You know, at the end of the day, I have my lawyers, I have my finance, I have my team over there, I'm the boss. I have the responsibility of the company, but I'm the only one who has the authority basically to take a decision, and I don't need to have anybody as approval, where all my colleagues which are working for enormous company, they have a XYZ board members, XYZ committees, XYZ things over there, and they cannot move their fingers, and you know, without having 10 or 15 people signing basically on the deal. So I'm much more flexible and much faster. Because we don't have all these committees, all these overheads, I'm also much cheaper, you know, and that's the reality. When you go to the fees that the hotels are charging, you know, I may have a fees which is a structure identical to all the big guys, but all the other services, I'm 50% cheaper. So basically the owner will make absolutely enormous saving just by saving by signing with us. We are also the only hotels in the Middle East, or international chain in the Middle East today, which is 100% halal friendly. You know, we are dry hotel. We don't serve alcohol, we don't provide alcohol, and we don't want to have anything to do with alcohol. We are offering a very safe environment. We have an extremely high numbers of single female traveler families, and that's what we want. It doesn't mean that we don't have business people. We have a lot of business people. We have a lot of couples, but they come over there because they are safe. You know, regardless of the locations, obviously we are dry when we're in Sudan, in Saudi Arabia, and in Sharjah, because that's the way it is. But we are also dry in Lebanon. We are dry in Jordan. We are dry in Ajman. We are dry in Dubai. We are dry wherever we are. So it is part of our philosophy. It's part of our culture. It's not like the others. Or some other companies, basically they are dry because the owner want to have it dry, but it's not their philosophy. That's our DNA.
So, and you know, I think as we move forward, you know, as business becomes more sophisticated and the tools for marketing and tracking customers become so much more sophisticated.
Indeed.
Do you think that, you know, people, you know, all businesses and even in hotelier, that they're going to become more specialized, more niche, and you know who you know. Even if you want that bohemian, hippie, vegan, evergreen person, and your hotel's just going to cater to those guys, you can find them now because of the internet. You know, is niche specialization the flavor of the future?
Well, unfortunately and fortunately, yes. Unfortunately, because you know, a few years ago, you had one positions which basically was doing the sales and marketing and the revenue. Okay, well, today I have 3 persons to do exactly the same job. I have a specialized person just for the digital aspect. I have a marketing person, which is in her company, which doing only the marketing and the PR. I have a salesperson who do only the sales, and I have basically a business development who only do business development. So it becomes so sophisticating that basically if you don't have the right person just to do a specific task over there, then you will lose the grip. Now, I said fortunately and unfortunately, because unfortunately, this has a cost. And at the end of the day, you know, the customers is paying for it. You know, and I know that most of the people will say, nah, you know, it's free of charge. No, it's not free of charge. You know, nothing is free of charge in life. But compare again to all the big guys over there, you know, the headquarters is only 15 people. Okay, we are running 20 hotels throughout the regions, you know, with 20 people in the headquarters. Well, ask the big guys, you know, how many people they have in the headquarters in every location they have. And then you will see that it's basically hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, and even thousands. So at some point of time, you know, the customers have to pay for these guys too. And that's part basically of all the overhead that the hotels companies are charging, which we don't have to.
So do you think this cascades down, you know, to our listeners? If you're managing your career now, the days of the generalist are slowly, you know, you're running out of runway, that, you know, the specialist is really the way to go.
Well, yes and no. And the reason is fairly simple. At some point of time, every single specialized person or specialist has to become a generalist. You know, take a general manager for one of our hotels. Maybe at some point of time, the guy was, you know, food and beverage or rooms or sales and marketing. Okay, and that was exactly where he was specialized. But through his career, he had to make some career move, and he decided, obviously, first of all, to level up his level of knowledge. And from the sales and marketing, the guy may have started to learn less about sales and marketing and learn more about food and beverage. And from food and beverage, a little bit less about rooms. So the specialized person, very specialized person, become less specialized in sales and marketing, a little bit more in food and beverage, a little bit more in room. And then the general manager has so many hats that he cannot be specialized on everything. He has this field of expertise, but at the end of the day, he doesn't have to be specialized on every single domains of his own hotel. He do need basically to be a leader to make sure that he have some key people which will do the job that he cannot do himself. And that's basically how you create a team. You know, for example, at HMH, our headquarters over there, the professionals that are working there are all top people. And they are all coming from top companies, you know. And they decided basically to join HMH because maybe we are a smaller company, because we can move faster, because we have more laugh and more fun than basically in the big companies, because we can afford to. Because we take the business very seriously, but we don't take ourselves very seriously. And I can tell you, when you come to HMH office, you will see a team of people, you know, with the smile that you have on your face now, Shane, you know, and that's pretty nice to have. You know, which is not always the case when you worked on the big companies, where basically you have to, you know, put your back against the wall just to make sure that you are not going to have any knife there. So that's the way it is.
This is Laurent Vauvenel, the Chief Executive Officer of Hospitality Management Holdings, sharing his insights on what it takes to make it in the hotel game in the Middle East. We're going to have more of his advice for getting the top of the hospitality game in just a minute.
Dubai Eye 103.8, award-winning news, business, sport, and lifestyle coverage. Stay one step ahead.
Welcome back to Eye on Careers. And yes, I want to thank the ICAW for bringing this show to you and giving us an opportunity to bring real business people, real advice from people on the front lines on how to manage your career, how to manage your business. I so often get bombarded with MBA babble and theoretical academia that sometimes you get lost, and where's the fantasy versus reality? But you know, with our show, we bring on real business people who are talking about real business problems and how they approach them. And we're here now with Laurent Vauvenel, the Chief Executive Officer of Hospitality Management Holdings. Laurent, welcome back to Eye on Careers.
Hi, Shane.
It's pretty exciting to have you here. And I think one of the other exciting things about the show is it's interactive. So if anyone has a question, you can SMS us at 4001, and we're happy to take those questions. And if you are having trouble with your business, with your career, you can come and see us live on November 2nd at the Canadian University of Dubai. It's completely free, and we have Mark Shuttleworth, the CFO, the former CFO of Do, talking about how he climbed Mount Everest. This guy climbed Mount Everest during one of the most dangerous periods. 12 people died during those 60 days. And he draws the parallels between climbing Everest and climbing the corporate ladder. So there's a lot of learnings there. And that's on November 2nd at the Canadian University of Dubai at 6:30 p.m. to 9 p.m. That's 6:30 p.m. to 9 p.m. And you can get more on that on the Shane Phillips Career Clinic online on LinkedIn and YouTube and Facebook. It's out there. But enough about that. Laurent, when you look at success, what role does failure play into that?
The best part of it.
The best part of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
You've got to be an optimist with an
absolutely.
Answer like that.
No, you have to be. You cannot be successful all your life. At some point of time, you are going to face the failure. Yeah, no, that's inevitable, you know. If somebody tell me that, you know, he never failed in his life, then I will say, well, you know, fantastic, good for you guys. But, you know, I think that, what did you learn from that? I think that failure is part of the business. It's part of life. And it's just a matter of how you recover from it. You know, what lesson do you learn and what taken basically you will have in order to make sure that next time it doesn't happen. You know, it's remind me a little story about a guy which was giving I cannot give the name of the company, but it's a big U.S. company. And the guy was giving a $3 million project. And the guy absolutely screwed up big time. And he was, according to the HRs and to the development people, and the guy was absolutely sure that he was going to get fired. And he said, and the people asked him, said, but no, what went wrong? And the guy really had to really make an analysis and SWOT and all the things over there and say, what did it run wrong because of this? And the guy, and he said, well, if you had to do it again, what will you do? And say, well, I will do this. And I said, okay. And he gave the envelope. And the guy really thought it was, you know, resignation, you'll get fired. And again, the guy got a $20 million project. And the guy was absolutely shocked and said, I'm sorry, I just screwed up $3 million and you're giving me your $20 million. And say, yeah, because obviously we just invested in $3 million in your training. And that's what it is. You know, when you fail and you know that you are making a mistake and you know how to correct it, well, you make sure that next time you don't do it. So failure is part of life, definitely.
Well, and it's almost exactly what Fadi Gundur, the founder of Aramex, said, which we had on earlier in the show. And if you missed that, you can go to DubaiI1038.com/IonCareers and get the podcast, where he talked about it's a trial, it's a learning process, that you're in learning mode, you're in growth mode, and so all these setbacks actually push you forward. We had Yves Mongar on, who's the chairman of Nestle, and he said, you know, are you looking at stumbling blocks or stepping stones? And it seems like all of you know, the individuals like yourself who are at the top, they see stepping stones, they see growth opportunities, they see these as their learning opportunities and not setbacks.
No, absolutely. Everything, you know, you have to be positive in life. And it doesn't matter how smart, it doesn't matter what type of education you have, and it doesn't matter how many degrees you have. At the end of the day, you always basically take a dive. It's just part of life. You just need to be able to recover from that one and get stronger, you know. You know, I was telling you offline earlier that for many years I had a small frame in my office, and that was the only written warning that I got from one of my boss, just to remind me that, you know, I also screwed up, and I don't want to make sure that it will not happen again. And I wanted to have everybody coming in my office and see that basically behind me, you know, the boss is, actually also went through the same thing.
You put it on the wall.
Absolutely.
You framed it and
absolutely.
Put it up in your office,
yeah.
Like somebody else would frame their MBA degree.
Yeah, actually the MBA degree was actually, you know, below the table, but basically that one was on the wall because I thought it was quite funny. I was quite young also. I was 28 at the time. But, you know, you have to laugh. You have to laugh of your failure, and because it helps. Everybody have his own way to deal with stress. Everybody have his own way to deal with adversity. Mine is basically, you know, to make fun of it, because I said, okay, you screw up. Why should it be a secret? You know, everybody in the hotel knew that I'd screwed up anyway, and everybody knew in the hotel that the GM said basically, you know, give me a big slap on my butt over there. And I said, okay, well, guys, this is what happened, but I'm still the boss. And as far as I'm concerned, I never lost respect because of that.
But you also were very committed, first of all, to the industry. So, you know, no matter what setback you faced, you stuck in the hotel business once you got into it. And the second thing was, is you were not afraid to take on challenging environments. So you went and worked in emerging markets or pioneer markets. You took roles in some volatile pioneer markets that some executives wouldn't have taken. Do you think that this is a viable career strategy, that going away from the fold, out of, you know, the mature markets where generally your head office is, and taking roles in these more remote areas is a career catalyst move?
I'm not sure that I will do it again if I had to. However, I don't regret one second what I've done. You know, I moved around, you know, with the families, with the children, and I can tell you that's really, really helped them also to understand life. You know, you live in Dubai, what a great life you have in Dubai. Go to other countries where people don't have, you know, food to eat, clothes, you know, on their back. They don't have electricity or even running water. We take things for granted, but when you go to these countries over there and you realize, you know, the type of misery that they live, you know, you should be happy to have a life, to be alive, and to have what you have. my kids are children of the world. And far as I'm concerned, you know, they mean today, you know, they live in Australia and the other one lives in Tokyo. And they are pretty lucky, but they don't forget where they come from and don't forget also what they have seen. So in terms of career move, is that the right things to do? Well, if I could avoid, obviously, and have a good life all the time, that's not a problem. But I don't forget that, you know, when I went to some of these countries over there where life was not that easy, I also learned a lot. And if it was not always professionally, it was, you know, from the human perspective. And far as I'm concerned, I don't regret one second what I have done.
So what's your final advice for anyone who wants to make it in this world?
Be passionate about what you do and don't take yourself too much seriously.
Be passionate about what you do. Don't take yourself too seriously. A lot of people have trouble with that one, though.
Yeah.
They get a bit of a stiff lip there, but you don't, in fact.
No, let's put it this way. At some point of time, when I was a little bit younger than I am now, yes, I believe that I took myself a little bit seriously. Maybe today I'm a little bit older. Maybe I'm in a position today where the people know that I'm serious about business, and therefore I don't really need to show muscle. That basically to show that I'm in business. So I don't take myself as seriously today that I used to take me, for example, 10 years ago. Life is too short. You know, we are just a small energy coming through life. You know, just make sure that basically you do the best as you can with whatever you have and make sure that you treat the people the same way you want to be treated. And regardless of your positions, if you are, a ranking fellow or a CEO, at the end of the day, you know, we all know how we will all finish.
There's only one way out of this game.
Absolutely.
That's on your back in a box.
Absolutely. And we call that dust.
Back to dust, right? So if you're going to die anyway, why not go for gold? Put it all on the table.
Yeah, but again, you know, gold can be so many things, you know. Be a decent human being, that's already not bad. And far as I'm concerned, that's good enough.
Well, Laurent, I want to thank you so much for coming out on the show. And it's been a great time. I could have easily spent another hour with you. So hopefully we can have you on again sometime. But thanks again.
Thank you, Shane. Thanks. Much appreciated.